Hello, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This episode is for the week of December 4th, 2006, and on today's episode we have an interview with Jonathan Weir. He is currently playing Ebenezer Scrooge in the Goodman Theater's A Christmas Carol. You don't want to miss his interview with Tom Williams. Also, we have an audio review of The Christmas Carol. And of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another established episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of December 4th, 2006. The Tony Award-winning play Doubt will make its Chicago premiere at the LaSalle Bank Theater. Cherry Jones, the Tony Award winner for Best Actress, is starring in the national touring production of the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Doubt. Doubt, written by John Patrick Shanley, is directed by Tony Award winner Doug Hughes, and it will be making a limited 3-week engagement at the LaSalle Bank Theater starting on January 9th. Cherry Jones will be playing the same role that she originated in the production back in 2005. The role earned her a Drama Desk Award, an Outer Critics Circle Award, a Lucille Lortel Award, and also an Obie. Click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section for more information on the national tour of Doubt coming here to Chicago. The Trib Stage Ticker is reporting that Young Frankenstein may be coming to Chicago next summer for a pre-Broadway tryout. Now, this is of course not official yet, but many, many shows have done well here in Chicago before they go to Broadway, of course, and why wouldn't Young Frankenstein want the same success? Word is that the cast is set to include Kristen Chenoweth, Sutton Foster, Cloris Leachman, and Roger Bart. The show definitely plans to open in the fall of 2007 on Broadway, but it may be here in the summer for the test run, and tickets will certainly be hard to get. Stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News Podcast for more information. Tickets have gone on sale for 12 Angry Men. That's right, the classic jury drama will be coming to the LaSalle Bank Theater on January 30th. Cheers star George Wendt and Richard Thomas from The Waltons are set to star in this national tour. About 12 jurors, and that is a hard word to say, deliberating about a trial for murder. Don't miss 12 Angry Men at the LaSalle Bank Theater on January 30th. For more information, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Coming Soon section. Talk Theater in Chicago would like to congratulate Philip Santora on his new position as the Managing Director of TheaterWorks out in California. Santora was formerly the Managing Director of Northlight Theater up in Skokie, and we wish him well out in Palo Alto. Congratulations again, Philip Santora. And for those of you out there who really want to see the Goodman Theater's Christmas Carol, well, guess what? A new ticket program is in place. Starting daily at 10 o'clock in the morning, all of the remaining tickets for the mezzanine tier will be available for half price at goodmantheater.org. All you have to do is put in the promo code MEZTIX, that's MEZZTIX, during the ordering process. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, half price tickets starting at 10 a.m. Don't miss that. Well, thank you very much for listening to this established episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have now come to the end of the news, but before I let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Henry VIII, Act 3, Scene 2. Be just, and fear not. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So, until next week, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it. Hello, you are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast. The following is a review of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens at the Goodman Theater. A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, adapted by Tom Cremer, directed by William Brown, review by Tom Williams. Jonathan Weir delivers a deliciously human Ebenezer Scrooge. In their 29th season, the Goodman Theatre once more sets the standard for holiday fare with their magnificent production of the Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol. It is marvelous to see how the Goodman Theatre keeps this annual staple fresh and engaging. No matter how many times one sees this Goodman production, it still delivers enjoyment. The 2006 production has a few new faces and boosts more English folk music. Longtime cast member William Brown, who played Ebenezer Scrooge the last few years, returns as the director. His fellow longtime cast member Jonathan Weir is in the lead as the nasty Ebenezer Scrooge this year. Weir has a commanding presence, large voice, yet exudes all the humor Dickens presented in Scrooge. Weir's Scrooge is all at once bad-tempered and cheap, yet deep down, he is a fragile human not beyond redemption. Weir seems to be having a ball playing Scrooge, and we have fun seeing his redemption. Director William Brown and adapter Tom Cremer have enhanced the contrast of light and dark in this story. Their production has humor and darkly scary moments, each of which are clearly played to the hilt. Steve Haggard, as the ghost of Christmas Past, gives the ghost a mischievousness that energizes. The generous use of live English-style folk music composed by Andrew Hansen adds flavor to the richness of the excellent sets, costumes, and lighting. The blend of quirky characters, ghosts, and local Londoners gives the fable a humanity that rings true to the spirit of the Christmas season. We see the irascible Scrooge go from bah, humbug, heartless holiday hater to a reformed, generous humanitarian. He gives all of us hope, as does the humble Cratchit family. This smart, scary, and funny show is a heartwarming family fare that'll drive the spirit of the holiday season to all who see it. I especially like Jonathan Weir's Scrooge. He added a few cute moments that landed a few unexpected laughs. Steve Haggard, Bradley Mott, Dennis Grimes, and Katie Jeep offered spirited performances that gave the show surprising energy. If you're wondering which holiday show to see, definitely pencil in the Goodman's A Christmas Carol. It simply is the premier holiday show in Chicago, and that's why it's lasted for 29 years. This show is highly recommended. A Christmas Carol is playing at the Goodman Theater, which is located at 170 North Dearborn Street in Chicago. Running time is about 2 hours and 15 minutes with intermission. It runs through December 30th, and for more information, call 312-443-3800. Again, that's 312-443-3800. I'm Dustin Moat, and you are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast. Remember, this play is happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is from A Christmas Carol at the Goodman Theater. He is Jonathan Weir, and he is playing Scrooge. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Tell us how you got this role of Scrooge.
Well, I got a call. Well, this first of all, let me start by saying this is my 7th year doing A Christmas Carol, not as Ebenezer Scrooge, but I've done other roles at the Old Space.
All right, which other roles have you?
I did 4 years of Marley in the Old Space that Henry Godinez directed, the Old Goodman. And then Kate Buckley, I worked with her. I did Old Joe. I did Topper. And then last year I worked with her last year. And I played Bob Cratchit. So and I've gone from the ridiculous to the sublime to the ridiculous. Now this year I'm playing Scrooge. So I got a call from Bill Brown, who was chosen to direct it. I guess it was this last late spring, and they were looking at putting a cast together, and he asked me if I would be interested. So I said, yeah, sure.
It's got to be one of the dream roles to play.
Well, it is a bit of a monumental role, certainly. It's not, you know.
For those two people in the world who don't know what A Christmas Carol, give us a quick synopsis of it.
Written
of
by
story.
Charles Dickens, 1843. It's the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, the miserly business owner, who is, from my perspective, so grounded and so closed off from the rest of the world. And as they say, in the opening narration, he is solitary as an oyster. He is basically he's turned his back on the world what's happened in his earlier days, and he treats everyone pretty rough. And then he has a visitation by Jacob Marley, his old business partner, who then warns him that there'll be 3 more visitations from Christmas past, present, and future. And what basically happens over the course of 2 hours is I get a chance to look at my life in the past, the present, and the future, and how it affects me. And so it's quite a journey every night, and it's a joy to do.
Well, you are marvelous in it.
Thank you, sir.
It must be intimidating to be directed, to take over a role that Bill Brown played for 4 years and did a terrific job.
He did. He was fabulous in the role. He's as equally fabulous director. I've worked with him on probably 5 or 6 other productions.
I agree. I think he's one of the best in this time.
As I say, I will follow him into battle anywhere, anytime. And, you know, it's interesting because I've been asked that question a couple times about what's it like being directed by someone who played the role. And I never had a moment's trepidation or concern because it's Bill, first of all. But secondly, I know he wasn't looking for a recreation of what he did at all. He's a big believer that you bring yourself to the role. So it's interesting, though, because I asked him during rehearsals, I said, okay, so what's it like to direct somebody in a role that you've done?
Ah, that's a good question, too. Unfortunately, he's not here.
I turned the table over on him.
But, what did he say?
He said, you know, it's interesting. We've only had two. During the rehearsal process, we probably had 2, maybe 3 moments where it was like, okay, that's what you – I'll take that note, but that's I'm also going to explore it this way and see where it gets me. And he said, you know, there were a couple – same thing. There were a couple moments where it was like, oh, I just know this. I know where he needs to go. So I guess being a parent, I've lived this to a child, and now – I know where you need to get to, but he let me explore it fabulously. The whole cast actually let us explore it and find it on our own, which is, I think, is the beauty of this year's production.
And how did you approach it to make it slightly your to make it your own and not make it just you know Bill Brown
or Rick Snyder or Tom Mueller
or any of the great ones?
Right, and it's interesting. I understudied Tom Mueller when I was Marley. I understudied him as Scrooge. I understudied Rick Snyder. I was Marley to his Scrooge, and I understudied Bill 1 year. So I certainly had a perspective on the role. And maybe it's so the challenge for me was how am I going to find my own voice with this role, in this role, where it's become such a landmark production, 29 years. And my first place I started was that he's a man. He's not a beast. He's a man. And he's lived a life cloistered and sheltered and or closed off from the rest of the world. And what would that be like? I mean, we've all had those days where, you know, if you've driven in traffic in Chicagoland, you know how frustrating life can be dealing with the public sometimes or in a crowd down State Street or, you know, so you amplify those moments of irritation and you try to find ways to put them into the moments of the show.
I've got to ask you about the coal, the scenes with the coal, when you're grabbing the coal out of it.
Right.
I mean, that was new.
That was something I found in rehearsals.
That was you?
Yeah.
You put that in?
Yeah. And then during one of the previews, or actually during one of the tech rehearsals, the final moment in the final counting house where Scrooge is coming back in happy and looking to catch Bob Cratchit, the yelling Merry Christmas to the coal once I put it in was also something that happened in the moment, and that it became a nice bookmark, and it was a different way of telling the story that happened just happened by happy accident.
Well, I thought you gave him a humanity.
Thank you.
To him. Sure, he was the villain, and you know, you have the big voice, and you were scary.
Good,
but
in a good way.
Yeah, but you also hit on the humor. I think the whole show did. It was kind of you were going from the light, the humorous side to the dark side.
Well, Bill is really big as a director on what interests him is things that the actor brings to it. The actors are infinitely more perspective and creativity than one person can. So he gives a great free rein for actors to explore. And with that, he encourages life is messy sometimes, you know, and you can find things through the chaos as well during a rehearsal process. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Also, what I thought was interesting was the little almost sarcastic comments that you made. I don't know how much of that was in the script or.
Well, it's all the script. Yeah, okay. I guess it's just coloring it with
the coloring with
where I was. I mean, the other thing was like that coal moment that you're talking about, the grabbing the coal out of it. It came to me because it's like, look, this is how desperate this guy is.
Oh, yeah, and
it's
this is what he would have done.
This is what he would have done. And it isn't neat and tidily. You know, we often think of a period piece, a play or historical play. We think, oh, and this is where Bill is fabulous with too, because he's so well read and he understands history, that he encourages the actors to be real and human in those hoop skirts and in those frock coats and waistcoats. And they were human beings back then too. They laughed, they cried, they had their experiences. So, but that was an example of trying to find something that illustrated character, but wasn't truly just a bit. It was also character driven.
Well, I thought also what you did in the early scenes when you were frightened by Marley when he visits you.
He really scares me. He's scary. I mean, Martin's
now,
very scary.
Not only the production values.
Right.
I mean, you should see him there, but you don't.
Right.
And I fall for that every year. I
mean, right. The surprise entrance. Yeah.
Yeah, the surprise entrance. And how you show the fear.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was interesting having played that role. Four times, and I loved doing that role as well. And you know, it's interesting. Scrooge asks a lot of questions in that, as does Marley. They ask a lot of questions of each other. If you look at the text, there's a lot of question marks. And so, you know, as Bill likes to say, very few questions are rhetorical. You ask the question, you expect an answer. And you know, what do you want from me? Who are you? I mean, those are all point blank questions that you're also scared to death of because you've got this.
Well, the whole show rests on that, on that scene. And
Marley really launches.
Yeah, you two guys really connected and made it very, very clear.
Yeah,
if you never
wonderful.
Knew the story, had never seen a play, you would, once that scene was over, you knew what it was about,
right.
What was at stake.
What was coming up, yeah.
Yeah, and that really made
it. Yeah, the stakes are very high in that scene. And he sets the tone and the stage for those three visitations of Christmas, past, present, and future. So
I liked the work of Steve Haggard, too.
Oh,
and that
it's a shame he doesn't have a sense of humor, right?
That's a little different. That was
very
lighter than any of the others.
Tell us
about that. That's the first Christmas Past.
And I remember the first time we sort of did it full out in rehearsal. He came in and we were holding for laughs in rehearsal hall because people were responding to him. So
he's a very funny,
very funny man. Very bright, very sharp. And what I love about there's a couple of different things about his past that I absolutely love. And one is that, A, there is a sense of humor. Bill also worked with, if you notice his costume, it's just a hint of, he's got a red cravat that I wear at the end of the show. It's so subtle, but he's got a similar sort of hairline. It's just a hint of, was this Scrooge in the past?
Yeah.
Was
you
it
know,
or
I
wasn't
was thinking
it? I mean,
it a little
not,
bit,
it's,
yeah.
He's not hitting you over the head with it.
Right. Almost like a leprechaun, too.
He's very... Well, I equated him, the way he makes his entrance, it's like he's not flown in 40 years. I say it's like he's like Aunt Clara from Bewitched who lands in the broom closet every time she comes in. Speaking of unexpected and full of surprises, he does a beautiful job, really does.
And it really added a lot of freshness,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the
show. And a fresh perspective and a lot of humor. And yet he's deadly serious about this journey that he's going to take me on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that you comes know? Across. So, but... I can't emphasize that humor enough because it really makes the show light and it takes a little edge off.
It does. And the other thing, too, is he doesn't play it like I'm this ethereal thing and this is what a spirit does. We talk like, you know, he's a human being that's a ghost of Christmas past, if that makes any sense. You know, we admire his work a lot.
I also thought that the scenes where you meet Mr. was it? Fezziwig.
Yeah, Fezziwig.
Fezziwig, yeah, and that the Christmas Celebration, they seem to have made that bigger.
Yeah, it's Susan Hart did the choreography the last couple of years, and they did some. The other thing that I want to, I'll just throw in a plug. Well, plug, and it's really an admiration for Andy Hansen, who did
yes,
the music
yes.
this year.
I noted that in my review that the music was the English folk style. And until I read the notes later, I thought it was, old music that somebody found.
But he composed
and
it.
And I know a lot about that era of music, and it was very well done.
He did. The thing, what it does is, particularly for the Fezziwig scene, there's working with the live. We have three live musicians on stage as well, a French horn and two violinists. And during the Fezziwig, Steve Haggard also plays one of the little sort of folk drums. Is that they've kept an undercurrent and a beat underneath that whole scene during Fezziwig's
yes,
thing.
Did,
so
yeah.
the energy never drops out of that scene, which in the past has been a problem because the music plays and there's lines and the music starts up, but there's this pulse that pulsates, which is so absolutely perfect for the Fezziwigs because they are the heart of his past in terms of work experience.
Yes.
And he certainly doesn't follow suit. I mean, he takes a different approach, but Scrooge does. But yeah, no, that and the choreography. And Bill's done some interesting thing with, I don't know if you noticed, with the freezes. When I look at Belle, I see Belle in that Fezziwig scene, the girl that I fell in, my first and only love. The rest of the company freezes, and it's just this great little light bump, and it shifts, and the focus of the play
is
really wonderful.
Yes, too. That was. And in some of the scenes and some of the comments you make when you're doing your travels,
mm-hmm.
like when you go to the Cratchit family.
Yeah.
And I love that scene where they had the Tiny Tim
hobbling across the stage.
Yeah,
how's
that dialogue?
Boy, I remember the first time I watched
that. Gets you in the heart.
I remember the first time rehearsal I watched. I'm like, you're not really going to do that, are you? Oh, you are. Okay. Not Tiny Tim, but Bill. I'll let that happen. But I think it got mentioned in several of the reviews that because Tiny Tim's not just shoved to the side in his little chair. He's like, you really see what the problem is. He is a cripple. And he takes a 30-second cross to hobble across stage to his little chair.
But it's such a little thing. But yet
it's such a little thing.
It gives you the empathy for the character.
And that's great.
Before,
it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what?
Is he tiny because he's small or is he tiny because he's sick? Yeah, it was always the question. But here you see, and it's great storytelling. I mean, it's just a small little moment that really sets it up really very nicely.
Well, I also liked some of the younger actors that played, like Scrooge when he's Dennis Grimes, I believe.
Dennis Grimes does the sort of the Fezziwig Scrooge, and there's a younger child performer, Mitchell, who's I think 12 or 13. But Dennis Grimes does a really nice job, and we have a great Belle this year, Katie Jeep, who has become my favorite Belle of any Belle. Sorry to anybody out there that may have had a Belle
with the Irish accent.
With the Irish accent, and she's got a spine, and I've had several people tell me that's the first time that breakup of that relationship, not the first time, but it resonated this time because
right before
there
was, to me,
she
it was
really,
it was artificial. Like, why wouldn't he, why does he just,
why is he being such a jerk?
Yeah.
And then here you go. There's and it's a small backstory thing, but Dennis and I decided, actually it was Dennis's idea that Fan, his sister who comes and gets him from the schoolyard, that in that 3-year period between him meeting Belle and then the breakup scene, there's 3 years that have passed. That in that interim, his sister has died because Fred's been born. We sort of created this thing that's part of what happened. The audience doesn't know this, but the actor can certainly live in it and have that in his head. But that's when Fan died, and that part of the reason why Scrooge does react so differently is because he couldn't save his sister. He didn't have the money. So if he has the money to set... To take care of Belle, his future wife, the business and all of this, and I'm apprenticed, I'm going to be manager, and
so it's all
for the best. And how many of us can relate to that out there listening that, it's about getting ahead, it's about making money, it's about taking care of our families, and yet at the same time, like we oftentimes let things slip through our hands.
Well, that's one of the lessons that I think a lot of people relate to, particularly men, heads of households,
right?
Spending all that time, not ever knowing your family because you're making all this money.
Well,
for
so
what?
Many, and maybe it's less so now, but so many men judge, they base their identity on what their income is or what their job is. I mean, and probably a lot of women out there too. And
well,
part of the message,
yeah, they're equal opportunity,
equal opportunity mess up. Yeah. No. But part of the message of the show is, you have it in front of you, and do you see it when you have that the greatest thing in your life? And that was Belle. It was his one love, and he let her go away. he let her go. He couldn't speak up and fight for her. She's fighting for the relationship.
Yeah, and I think you made that so clear. Again, it helped having somebody strong like that. But what was the idea of the Irish accent?
Well,
I think it worked, but Chris Jones was kidding me because he says, "Oh, they put that in for you."
I'm an Irishman myself, so a long line of Irishmen, actually. Bill wanted something that wasn't. What I gleaned from during rehearsals, he didn't want a safe bell. He didn't want a polite bell. He wanted a bell with a spine. And the idea that, Ireland and England very close, and that there was that she would be there as perhaps a servant girl for somebody else, a cook, a maid or something in a house. And she was at this party that's where they met. And
that's of course what the Irish did. They came over to London
did.
To do that.
Well,
yeah.
My grandmother came over and did that. It was a scullery maid and then ended up becoming the head cook in St. Louis for a wealthy family. So that's how we got here. So it makes sense. And yet it's a little grace note for Belle that she's a little different. She's a little exotic with a little different dialect, if you will, with that Irish dialect.
And then it makes the whole scene believable.
I think so too. And the two of them together, it breaks my heart. Both scenes. I mean, the other scene, that first meeting scene is, I'll never forget, Bill turned to me one day in rehearsal. They're falling in love and they're doing this courtship with this dance. And he goes, "Okay, you haven't had that for 50 years. And you just go, "Oh, that's the hard part watching that. It's if any of us could go back and look at our time when we were.
Well, that's what
15,
I thought you
16,
did all
17,
the way
18.
Through the show that really helped, though, is you had the looks and the comments, whether they be just visual, and occasionally you might have said a word, but
right.
Just the body language.
Well, I'm really lucky because it's amazing, amazing cast. I mean, there isn't anybody up there that's not.
Well, how about Bradley Mott? What a job.
Yeah, it's a shame about him, too. No sense of humor, no timing.
I mean, yeah.
Not funny at all.
I mean, you get two of the funniest people in the show.
I know,
with him
right?
And Steve Haggard.
Yes. And Brad has done that role several years. And
yes, he
I
has.
I think I've had people tell me who saw it opening that even the people they were used to seeing seem different, seem new, seem fresh. And that's here again, that's Bill raising the bar and everyone.
Yeah, the energy level of the entire show.
Everybody attacks the piece voraciously, if I can say. You know, there's just a real commitment to the piece. And so I start out by saying is that I'm very fortunate that I get to watch this every night with these actors, amazing actors. They make my job a lot easier because all I have to do is just receive the information and relive it.
I think you're understating what you've done.
I do sweat a little bit.
Yes. Let me ask you The Wire, when you go flying around the stage.
Oh, the flight at the top.
I know there's a lot of actors I've talked to that are scared to death of that. How do you react to that?
Well, I'm okay with it. We have a great crew, great floor manager, state backstage manager, and great stage managers. I feel taken care of, and there's a safety in, and the guy from ZFX.
Trust factor.
Yes, absolutely. And the first, we had a 5-hour rehearsal one day several weeks ago before we moved to the theater from rehearsal hall, where I got used to the feeling. I got a chance to experience what it was like, and we had to work out a lot of those moves because Steve's line goes up and down, and my line only goes back and forth. So it was really a choreography that's happening off stage, right? That people are making those ropes, the lines go up and down and back and forth to give a sense of flying. And I was really big with Bill when we talked this summer at one point. I said, I really want to explore the flying and make it look like it's more than just two bales of hay being lifted up and lower down. And we were able to find some new stuff with that as well.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how it was different, but it seemed different.
Trust me, it was different.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
No, it's particularly, I think, with Steve Haggard's.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he
did a lot of
flying. We do that little fake, he touches bare but a touch of my hand upon your heart, and we start to fly, and I'm like, no, and then I get grounded again, and then he takes me up. So there was a little false start there that we'll try to do a little bit of storytelling as well.
Tell us how you prepare to do 8 shows a week.
I'm drinking a lot of water. I'm trying to get over a cold, which I stretch out a lot. It's interesting because we did a week of previews and we just opened. So I don't really know fully the answer to that, except for I'm going home and sleeping and not talking a lot on my days off. I do get to the theater early and I do some stretching in my dressing room and vocal warm-ups. And just really right now for me, it's finding what it is to do that 8 or 9 shows a week. So we'll see. More to come. But basically, it's a lot of stretching and warming up vocally and physically.
And the show is at the Goodman Theater.
Goodman Theater till December 30th.
December 30th. And you're doing, what's the schedule like?
Well, typically two.
I know it varies. You're going to have to go to the website.
Does, but if you go to www.goodmantheater.org, you can actually order tickets online. You can also come to 170 North Dearborn and order tickets at the, get at the box office. Or you can also, what was I going to say? Oh, schedule. The other thing is that tickets are selling really well right now, but the week after Christmas, there's a little more availability. So don't give up. Keep trying. And there are some tickets available before Christmas as well.
Well, I've said before that this is the definitive A Christmas Carol. When people start looking at schedules, there's a lot of good Christmas shows on. And, you know, a lot of people go to three or four.
There's Nutcracker. There's other Christmas
carols. This is the one that has to be number one on your list.
Well, it's great because, A, the production values are, I don't think they're the highest in the city. I'd pit them against any other theater in the country. But also, we collect for Season of Concern, which is the Chicago theater community's response to fundraising for those with AIDS in Chicagoland area. So every night there are four or five or six cast members out in the lobby collecting for Season of Concern, and it's only done during Christmas Carol, and it's sort of a great button after that show. And
it's a good time. Yeah,
yes, it's and we've raised thousands.
No one wants to be Scrooge after the show.
We do try to hit them, it's a great opportunity to A, connect with the audience, but also for the audience to just, you know, think about helping somebody else who's in need. And it's a great fundraiser, and we've been doing it for probably 15 years, I think. So,
well, you should be proud of what you've done with this
role. Thank you. It's a dream.
It's absolutely amazing. The biggest thing that I think you do is you bring a humanity to it. You scare us as the villain when he's the villain, but you also show that you're vulnerable and you're human.
Well, thank you.
And along the journey, you add the little bits of humor that show us that you are worth redeeming. And then it's believable when you are reborn and or redeemed.
Well, I'm still playing with that. That's the hardest hump for me right now is that journey. And it's gotten a little bit easier. But I also, at the end, I didn't want it just to be a string of bits. I wanted it to be come from.
Well, I think you set it up with the humor because you made it funny too. And then it's like the real Scrooge comes out.
Right. It's what's this new man who's going to be like, who's bubbling over with joy. And what's
And the
like?
Cast is so great, or the way they react initially when you come out, they all think, well, is this guy crazy or what?
Right. This isn't the same guy from Act One, is it? Yeah. So it's, but yes, tickets are available and, you know, do try and do come. And the other thing I was going to say is we have families that we hear when we're collecting for Season of Concern who say, you know, I've been coming. I brought my grandmother brought me, and these are my kids, and this is my grandma. You know, it's a family thing.
29 years.
We've had people say, oh, this is my 25th year. Or so it's become a bit of
well, for those
a
of us that may not know you, give us a little bit of your background. I know besides you're a song and dance man. You've done many, many shows. You've done classics.
Less and less of that.
Well, last year I saw you in the Boys Are Coming
That's
Home
true.
When
the
you
Northwestern.
Sang marvelously.
Thank you.
A lot of people didn't realize how strong a singer you were. And I go back far enough to have seen you in some of the singing roles at Marriott.
Right, did a lot of stuff when I first got to Marriott. I've been in Chicago. It'll be, it was just 20 years, actually. And I still feel like there's still people out there I've never worked with in town. And I'm like, you know, God, I still feel like, you still feel like there's, that's what I love about this town and this community. There's always people you want to work with, directors you want to experience, theaters you want to experience. So, I've been very fortunate that I've been able to.
Tell us some of the shows you've been in.
After this show, I'm going into a production of a Writers Theater, Bacchus Leipzig, directed by Nick Bowling.
Oh, you're
going
to be in that.
In that as well.
John Rieger,
and Larry Ando, and Ross Lehman.
Wow, what a cast.
Horrible group.
Talk about an A-list cast.
Yeah, right. I don't stand a chance. I won't be able to get a word in edgewise. I did Lion King for a year when it was in town here in Chicago. I stood by for Larry Ando, who was Scar, and I covered Pumbaa as well. Did Arms of the Man that Bill Brown directed up at Writers Theater.
I remember saying that.
Doctor's Dilemma that Michael
yes.
Habersham directed. Just did State Fair last spring out at Marriott. I don't do a lot of musicals anymore. I don't know why. I'm trying to spread
the
wealth
around. Well, a lot of
people
were saying
around.
They didn't know you could sing the way you did.
It's always nice to keep people surprised.
Yes, it is.
And I've done a string of stuff at Oak Brook. I worked a lot out there with Gary Griffin and at Marriott as well. Apple Tree, I did Violet and Sideshow up at Northlight years ago. So
I remember the Sideshow.
Yeah,
it was
a really fun production as well.
It was better than the Broadway production.
I thought so, too. It was a really solid cast as well. So, I've been fortunate to not, you know, eke out a living and make a, I always say if you're judged by the company you keep, then I consider myself very fortunate being an actor in Chicago because there are people who I admire and hold in great regard.
What advice would you give to the young actors who are, you know, who get frustrated because they're, you know, they're beating the doors down, going to to auditions, trying to get a role. What advice would you give them?
Oh God, you know, it's such a personal thing. A big thing for me was, there were moments when I was frustrated and was like, God, how am I ever going to, I'm never going to get seen into that by that theater and I think part of it is just keep studying. Once you start this career, you're a student for life. It's trite, but it's absolutely true. Once you start, you have to continue to challenge yourself, put yourself in different situations. You know, it's easy to stay put with the safe thing. And sometimes you have to go with the job that, or the opportunity that isn't going to be the most obvious choice to make. I was cast in Wicked when it first opened in Chicago, and I turned it down because I wanted to do I know everyone's in this room staring at me right now. I'm probably the only actor in town that would do that.
Probably.
But I just gotten off Lion King, and I had an opportunity to do. Okay, Bill had cast me as in Arms and the Man, and I really wanted to do that show. And I'd given my word to Bill that I was going to do it, and I could have gone and done it, but I also done Wicked. But I and it's nothing against Wicked, believe me. And if you're out there listening, give me a call.
You'd think about it.
Well, yeah, there was like 6 months after that. I'm like, well, God, they're still in town. I got nothing going now. I'm totally going to Wicked. So, but it all works out absolutely for the best is my point.
Well, I respect that. You gave someone your word.
Yeah. And also
you didn't back off.
So my point is continue to those actors out there, who young and old alike, who get frustrated, is keep studying, keep expanding, keep reading. And, you know, persistence will out. Part of my attitude is the last guy standing gets cast. So if you just keep at it, I mean, the world will tell you to go away repeatedly in this business.
Well, you have that great Chicago actor's attitude where there's no egos. I mean, you're willing to do ensemble. Yeah. One show you're the star, next show you're on the ensemble,
totally.
Right?
It's, you know, being the star is great, but all that work. No.
It's
about the work, but it's also, I'm a big believer that no one is bigger than the project. And that's why I feel so fortunate to be a working actor in Chicago, because it's about that basis of ensemble work. It's about getting the job done, pulling together, and you know, city of broad shoulders.
Well, that's great. What's the future hold for you?
I don't know.
Where do you see yourself in a year, 5 years?
Hopefully still employable. I'll keep going until somebody stops hiring me. I don't know. I would like to. I've gone out on the road twice since leaving Lion King. I've gone and subbed in twice for that. I enjoy that world as well. Certainly, the monetarily, it's fabulous. It's, but I learn a lot in that situation as well. I would, you know, there's people I'd like to work with some directors in town that I never worked with. I'd like to work with some actors in town I never worked with in Chicago. So, and some interesting scripts. That's sort of what is the draw for me. The people and the text.
And you're also you teach acting, right? At
Loyola University. I teach at Loyola University in Chicago. It's a liberal arts program. Really bright students, a great department that's expanding and growing leaps and bounds, building a whole new. They're redoing the Mundelein building into a $60 million art fine arts building.
Oh,
and
that's good.
Yeah,
to know. I didn't know.
They've started a dance program. They've got some amazing teachers there. And the I teach an exit class for seniors. So it's all about auditioning and sort of giving them the nuts and bolts of what it is to try to do it and do this business. And one of the things I tell people in my class is, look, there's two things you can control in an audition, and that's your preparation and your attitude. And you can't control whether they're eating or drinking or smoking or talking or not. So to a large extent, I try to live that as well. Don't try not to personalize those things. Just show up, be a journeyman, do your job, and then leave it behind. If they call you, great. If not, you got a chance to perform it and go on to the next one.
Great words of advice.
Yeah, you try.
And the best thing I can tell folks is they got to get to the Goodman Theater.
Please do.
Before, when's the 31st?
The 30th. December 30th.
December
30th. Saturday
to see
matinee.
One of the great Scrooges.
Thank you very much.
And I very much enjoy it.
I'm standing on the shoulders of Bill Norris and Bill Brown and Rick Snyder and Tom Mueller. So I've learned immense amounts from them over the years.
You put your stamp on it too. So,
thank you. It was my goal.
And you've succeeded. And not just me. I think everyone in town has agreed.
Thank you.
So we're generally right when we agree.
You're the reviewer. I'll trust you.
Well,
yeah,
you did it. Thank you so much for your time. And folks, get to see A Christmas Carol. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Please do.
Bring the whole family. Thank you, and go see a play this week.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. We would like to thank Jonathan Weir for allowing us to interview him this week. And also, I would like to thank Mark Meyer and Tom Williams, who make this podcast possible. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next week, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.